WordPress has succeeded because, well, it succeeded because it was open source in the first instance.
Founded in 2010, Pressable is a world-class managed WordPress hosting provider built on the same data network as WordPress.com and WordPress VIP. Their state-of-the-art platform empowers agencies, freelancers, e-commerce businesses, IT professionals, and WordPress developers to build, launch, and maintain amazing WordPress websites quickly, easily, and affordably. With industry-leading performance, 24/7 expert support, 100% uptime guarantee, and seamless integrations with WooCommerce and Jetpack, Pressable provides the tools you need to manage your WordPress websites and grow your business all in one place. They've also got a really cool demo system now. It's called My Pressable Playground, and you can create sites back in there, edit the settings for each, look at the security tools, performance, other site management tools, and check out the Pressable API for more advanced users. There's a robust REST API that you can develop applications on. It's all pretty open there and get a full view of everything. Just click the big Try Us Free button and give Pressable a try.
Hey, everybody at PostStatus. I'm excited to have this conversation today. My special guest is James Farmer, founder of WPMU Dev. And I've known of James. I think I've got to meet him maybe once. I know we've talked before, but, you know, as far back as James goes with WordPress and the cool stuff he was doing at the beginning when I knew about him, and now fast forward to today, I thought this would be a very relevant conversation. And if you know anything about James, he knows his stuff and has opinions, and I like his opinions, and I want to hear those. So, James, thanks for coming on the PostStatus Draft and doing this conversation with me. It's fun to hear your voice and hear what you're doing and get your thoughts on some things.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation. It's really cool.
You were just telling me it's like beautiful sunny skies in Melbourne, where I think you're based this morning. So thanks for joining us early for your time.
Spring has finally arrived. We're currently having a big wet, as it's called in Australia, which means that it's just rain everywhere. But finally, it's sunny and nice, and we're rolling towards our summer.
Awesome. Well, I'm jealous. I want to get to Australia at some point. I haven't been there, and hope to see you in person and see your beautiful country. Well, okay. I'm going to dive right in, James, because I'm interested in these questions, and I want to hear your thoughts and opinions on things. But the first is just like, I know you as an early pioneer in WordPress in the product space in particular, but there's some people that may not know some of the backstory. So could you tell us like how you got started with WordPress, and then what the point where WPMU started, you know, that kind of origin story? Because I'm curious to hear for myself.
Yeah, for sure. No trouble at all. So way back in the mists of time, I was interested in blogging as an educational tool. I was a teacher in English as a foreign language, and then working in that area, and then education design. And I started to, I wanted to use blogs for like education purposes. And I had a look around, and I found this piece of software called Radio Userland by Dave Weiner. And it's just this fantastic piece of software. You kind of wrote it and manage everything on your desktop, and it kind of pushed it to a static HTML site. I mean, you know, radical. you could even call it headless, maybe. I don't know. That would have been, 2003. And I started my own blog, James Farmer's Radio Weblog, and I got a link from Dave Weiner himself, because I was using his software. And I think I got it described as an enthusiastic new edu blogger. And so I kind of got into it that way. And then a year later, my subscription was coming up, and I just heard about this, you know, kind of this other, you know, interesting software that was out there. There's this thing called Movable Type, which is doing all right. It was quite pretty. There's this thing called WordPress everyone was raving about. And so I thought, well, you know, might as well learn how to install something on a server, also learn what a server is, and that's the level of my technical ability. And so I kind of did all the steps and taught myself through and set up a WordPress blog in 2004, I think, called Incorporated Subversion, which was all about the educational philosophy of incorporating subversion into the design of your software, which then eventually became InkSub, because Incorporated and Subversion kind of went together. That was how I originally got started.
So 2004, So you got me. Similarity, 2006, when I had used this software, you may remember back in the day, because I had no coding. Yeah. I still don't have any coding experience, but Claris Homepage on the Mac and building little websites. Wow. I was like, this is ridiculous, trying to update my copyright footer or something when something changed. But before WordPress, mine was Google, was Blogger. Because you could publish things to the thing. But when you said weblog, it took me back to that weblog, time.
Golden period. What I really wanted to do, I wanted to start like a blogger kind of service for students, so that rather than people like typing in like discussion boards and doing all that Blackboardy kind of stuff, which they're still doing amazingly, it makes me just shudder. I could think about the state of educational technology. But rather than doing they would each have their own site and people would have their own profile, and a bit like a kind of proto Facebook kind of experience. And Radio User Land had this other bit of software called Manila, which allowed you to do that. But this was hideously complex and incredibly hard to put together. And I worked with like some of the IT guys in the school I was at the time, RMIT, English Worldwide. And we just tried to do it. We kind of got it together and it kind of didn't work. So when I discovered WordPress, I was really enjoying it because, it's, as we all know, it's a fantastic blogging platform. And it was so much kind of more fun and interesting. I could play with things and have all these plugins, which was so much better than this kind of static publishing thing where you'd have to tweak the HTML. Also not a coder, terrible tweaking. I mean, the Wayback Machine will demonstrate very clearly my design and coding talents. Then the real thing for me, the thing that when it really kicked off was when, I'm going to mispronounce his name because I always have done, I've never been able to, Donica put together this WordPress MU thing as a side project. And I was like, holy shit, that's how I can do Blogger for the students. They could put this together. Oh, uh-huh. My word. And so I just went to town on that and working on that. And I tried loads of examples and set up some things here. And it wasn't working. And then I, at the same time, Matt went over to Ireland to do some work with Donica. I'm sorry, Donica, please. I really am for the mispronunciation. He went over to Ireland and they kind of rejigged. So what would you call it? They're always doing it in our plugins. Refactored WordPress MU. Refactored WordPress MU and turned it into this really nice thing. And I was like, oh my god, it's even better. And I was having a glass of wine at home one night and just noodling around with this. And I owned at that point, I think about like four domain names or three domain names. So I had InkSub, which was my blog, and a couple of others like for friends and family. But because I was an edu blogger, I'd also, been like, oh, I wonder if there's anything about edu-based blogs. And eduBlogs.org was available for like, $8.95. And so I was like, oh, cool, I'll buy that. And so, I was sitting on this black leather couch in the suburb of Melbourne at 7 p.m., a couple of glasses of red. And I just thought, what about if I put this new WordPress MU stuff onto eduBlogs.org and then just posted about it and saw what happened? And so I did that. And it took a while. And it was a bit hard. And I woke up the next day and like 80 people had created sites. And I was like, my jaw hit the floor. It was astonishing because all of these people in the blogging community, most people using probably Movable Type, or some people using Radio User Land as Drupal users, or people like kind of all sorts of different platforms, and everyone was interested in WordPress and what WordPress was, but nobody really necessarily had the capacity or the extra area or even the coding ability to try it out. And so you could just set up a WordPress site and play with WordPress. People are like, oh yeah, hell yeah, I'll do that. And I think my claim to fame is that eduBlogs.org predated WordPress.com by 4 weeks. So there you go.
See,
yeah. And that's why I'm a billionaire.
I love that. I thought I knew the origins of WPMU as well, like your company name now. Heavy with the what does MU stand for? Multi-use, I think.
So actually MU, actually here's an interesting fact that not a lot of people know. It's actually the Greek letter of the alphabet, mu.
Okay.
Which was actually done by a little symbol that looks like this. And essentially yes. It means infinite or multiple and things there. And so it never was WordPress MU. It was actually WordPress Moo. But of course, nobody understood that, understood that or figured that out. And so it became WordPress MU. And then, of course, later on, after IDA utterly dominated the WPMU space and bought all the domains, WordPress multi-site. Which I got a little bit salty about that change, but we survived and we're still here.
So I remember the symbol now that you're saying that, connected to that way back. So I'm getting some nostalgia here too, thinking about because it was always this cool thing that you could do, and you did it well with EduBlogs, and that's how I remember hearing about what you were doing. I think it was WordCamp San Francisco, one of the first ones. Mm-hmm. That I think you presented, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, I don't think I presented at it. I did the first WordCamp in the Southern Hemisphere, WordCamp down under in Melbourne in Docklands, and so that might have been from there. That would be our original kind of thing.
So then EduBlogs took off, I think, from what I understand. Mm. And then how did you get to WPMU Dev, what you're doing now, in some form, shape?
So as I probably mentioned throughout, I'm not much of a developer or a coder. I'm actually not a developer or a coder. And but I wanted things for EduBlogs. I wanted this feature or this sort of thing and this extra functionality to be added to, simple things like, kind of tick the remember me box by default, or slightly more complex ones like where I wanted to put like a donate button in so people could support it. And so I was noodling around on the forums back in the day, there was a separate like WordPress Moo forum area. I don't think it was part of the original WordPress.org one. And I'm chatting to people and they're asking them questions. And eventually I ended up chatting to this guy called Andrew Billets, who was also on there, and asked him like maybe, if I kind of like gave him, I didn't have very much money, a few bucks or something, or if we could do some exchange, I could do something, and could he do a few things? And so we started pottering along, helping me with a few things like that. And also at the same time, he had set up a site called wpmudev.org, which he was basically using. Essentially, WordPress.org was set up for WordPress stuff. It had nothing related to this new MU stuff. It was a separate thing. And so he set that up in order to basically be plumbing, just be about WordPress MU, because that's what we were interested in. That's what we were playing with. And so we kind of continued to kind of work together and done those little things. And then around about 2006, when this kind of like progressed on and EduBlogs had taken on, I'd started like a sideline of it called EduBlogs Campus, which is now Campus Press, the education provider. Interesting Campus Press fact. I think I'm allowed to say it here. We're not allowed to put it in our marketing material, but Harvard Business School employed Dave Weiner for a year as a visiting fellow to set up their blogging platform on Manila, the platform I was talking about that set off Radio Userland as an early business thing there. And now Harvard runs on WordPress powered by Campus Press, which is
that's awesome.
I know, it's so awesome. I'm so happy about that. It only took like 15 years of like constantly pestering them, going, please, please, please use us. Please let us help you. But yeah, we can't be confident marketing material, but I think you can mention it somewhere like here. I suppose I will find out if we can't with some angry email somewhere, in which case, sorry, Harvard, I'm just boasting because I'm pleased about it.
Yeah.
It's a nice story. So basically it had progressed, and then I got this like contact from a football management game that I'd actually played, saying we'd like to make a football related kind of thing here, just like Edublogs. They found me through Edublogs, and to my utter shock, I put forward a proposal for, I think it was like 50 grand, and they were like, yeah, that sounds reasonable. And I was like, what? How could anybody spend this amount of money? Are you insane? And they flew me to San Francisco to do it. I spoke to Andrew. Andrew was going to be the developer and put all this stuff together. I was going to do the business and the content and the structure and the project management and all those things. And we did. We put it together. It was called footballunited.com. It's really cool. But then I said to Andrew, well, you know, how about, you know, like rather than me employing you these things here, how about we actually join up together and we form a company and we do this stuff together and split it 50-50. And he was like, yeah, cool. And I was like, you know, and you could have 10% of Edublogs, well, for what it's worth, it's making no money. And, you know, kind of, and we can bring in WPMU Dev, you know, this free repository place. I didn't really have any ideas for it. We can just pull our ideas and work together. And we did. And hence InkSub, which is the company name, because it was a free domain name I had lying around. I was like, well, I've got this.com. Why don't we use this? And hence why WPMU Dev then became part of InkSub.
Okay, I got it. Okay.
The story.
Yeah. I always love hearing these origin stories, because they help, you know, it starts with this wonder. Like you said, I wonder if we could do this. And I wonder if, or how things evolve over time, because like this started with a what if, that became Edublogs, and then eventually InkSub, WPMU Dev kind of came out of that. And now we're here today in 2020. So it's crazy thinking back too, but I love hearing the stories of how they evolve, because I'm the same way, you know, I'm not a developer either. And so I love that. Okay. So that's some of the backstory. Yep. And I wanted to share that, or you to share that, because I want people to know there's some things we could have a whole conversation on movable type, right? Some of those,
oh yeah,
because I remember that too. And some of the missteps they made that really helped propel WordPress next level.
Yeah, I know.
But I want to set this right. I want to set that stage though to say you've been doing this a long time, James, and you've seen a lot of the evolution of WordPress and the industry, the market, the growth, some of the things that have changed over time. And so it was good to share that story, but we could just camp out in entrepreneurial, but I really want to also in this second step is like, go, okay, now setting the stage, tell me where WPMU is today. And then I want to talk about technology. I want to talk about the web, and I want to talk about WordPress, and I want to get your thoughts on all these things. So where is WPMU today?
Cool. All right. So WPMU Dev today has evolved from its various plugin forms into something. It's somewhere halfway between plugins and a service and a hosting platform. Can you be halfway between three things?
Absolutely.
So essentially we've offered a, you know, kind of a core suite of plugins, you know, for security, performance. We've actually got a really good SEO plugin, but we just marketed terribly by me, named terribly by me. So there's a form builder and a security. I said security, didn't I already? And then we've got like a site management area that, you know, very similar to manage WP in some respects, but it allows you to look after all of those different things. But, you know, first and foremost, really over the last few years has been a hosting product. Which is built on top of DigitalOcean and Linode's infrastructure, or Linode, depending upon your preference. Which offers a really different managed WordPress experience that's really catered directly for resellers. So, web developers, freelancers, agencies, who are catering to clients who are often small businesses or medium businesses and those things. And so we're essentially trying to provide all the tools, the platform, the background to save them time, save them money, and help them produce really cool sites. That's what we are.
And how big is your team today?
The whole InkSub team is, it fluctuates a bit because we hire quite a lot, and we try and hire everybody at a junior level or mid-level. I mean, like, our entire exec team is, like, you know, people who started basically as junior staff things there. In fact, I think Tim, our COO, I turned him down twice, got rejected. It's always fun to think about. I was like, you're not good enough.
Yeah, he's a hoot, by the way. I've got to meet him a couple times.
He's good value, isn't he? He's a great manager as well. So the numbers vary, but I think we're about 175 or 176.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's cool.
Congratulations.
It's amazing. It shocks me, to be honest with you. I'm still a bit like, but we've done some nice things, and people are meeting up and stuff, and we're doing next April we're having not our first because we did one in New York back today, but our first, like, proper company retreat, and we're all going to go to Bali. I don't know if you've been to Bali. It's a lovely place in Indonesia, just north of Australia, and we're staying here called Seminyak. And so we're going for a week with 60 of us, which is so exciting. It's going to be so cool. I'd do a couple of days work, and then mostly just hang out and chat and see. You can see the sites, you can go to bars, you can do all sorts of different things. But I'm super excited about that.
Yeah, get that elbow time. Well, I love that, and congratulations to hear kind of the before, how it gets started, and now today. And one thing, you know, I paid attention to WPMU Dev for a long time, but a couple of things I've always admired is, one is you have a tool set of things that if you want to build WordPress sites and things like that, you've got it. Like, it seemed like growing over time, I'd go back when I was still running iThemes and go, how the heck are they doing all of this stuff?
With like this.
Yeah.
With a great deal of effort.
And I've been on the emails for a long time too. And I've always admired too, the content production that you all have done historically through WPMU. Oh,
thank you. And so sweet.
So cool. Well, have fun in Bali for sure. And tell Tim hi for me.
I will. I'll pass it on. He said he was looking forward to the live version of this. He got some
popcorn.
I bet
he was.
I was going to sit back, but it's all good. He can, this way he can watch it as many times as he likes.
Exactly. Then he can't throw tomatoes and different things at us. Well, okay. So thank you for that. And then I want to come back as we wrap up and talk about what you're doing, what you're excited about with WPMU as well. And one of the, you know, pioneers in the space in WordPress and the product space. But I want to take some time and I want to get your thoughts on some things. Okay. With all this experience and what you've seen, the evolution and all, you know, the ups and downs of entrepreneurship as well. But, you know, what's your outlook today? And this is I'm going to just start with the big one. WordPress.
Yeah.
You've seen, you've been there for the.
Sorry about the camera. It's doing all sorts of things.
No. I like it because I want one, because I've just got a stack one. You've got one that moves. But so as you look at, you've been there. I think we're talking like early on with WordPress, even before MU was like rolled out and stuff. And I think I came in, I was telling you before we started recording that, I think I came in somewhere in the 2 range, you know, when it was still blue and white, and it was like just one little horizontal menu. And I was like, this is the best thing on earth. But you've seen a lot. And so the first thing I wanted to ask out of the gate is, what do you think right now where WordPress is? What's your outlook on where we are today, how it's grown, and any thoughts around just WordPress today?
So it's every article about WordPress starts with WordPress powers X percentage of the web, and you know, it does this and it does that. And I think if I was a betting man, not betting man, but if I was, I would say that where we're at now in terms of saturation is probably about where we'll be. I think it's, I don't think there's going to be any necessary kind of growth apart from, you know, general growth of the web and people trading sites and so on, in a percentage market share. And I think that that's basically down to the Squarespace, Shopify, Wixification of the world. I mean, there's more and more people who are able to use, both because it's easier and because it's more accessible, and know about tools like Squarespace. You know, everybody pretty much does. And, you know, and even, you know, MailChimp, and so they're trying to come out with their versions of it, and they do a pretty decent job. So if you're a small business, which is, like I said, our members, their clients, their clients are looking at like a kind of Squarespace setup for, I don't know, say might cost them $200 or $300 a year, or they're looking at hiring a web developer and getting this done and this done, this done, and that's like, I don't know, say, let's say $3,000 to $10,000 a year, then it's like, well, I'll just put in the yards and figure it out myself. Yeah. And I think that's a lot of that's going to be happening and continuing to happen. However, I'm optimistic in terms of WordPress retaining its market share, because of course, you know, these third-party platforms just don't have the flexibility or the options. And also because, you know, they're heavily debt funded and they need to make money. And in doing so, they need to offer the kind of support and different levels and so on and so forth, which means that your Squarespace basic decent site with maybe a shopping cart on it is going to go towards $5,000-$6,000 a year, possibly more, you know, maybe even kind of like $2,000. And then all of a sudden it starts to be, oh, actually, well, this is a more comfortable kind of area. And we're trying to make one of the things we've got rolling out next year is we're trying to essentially allow our members to create a kind of Squarespace type automated provision environment with funky templates and all the cool things and WordPress built into it, or their own templates, so that they can, you know, essentially have a kind of build your own site option, which they can offer for their particular niche or area or those sorts of things. So I'm hoping that we're doing our bit to help us keep up with the Super Bowl ad buyers. Yeah. But it's still, you know, it's a rough and tumble world.
So this is something I've seen change in piggybacking on what you did. You know, when I started iThemes in 2008, it was the Wild West with themes, because they wanted that kind of, you know, experience to be able to find a good theme and kind of do it themselves, or a builder or freelancer kind of take it, mold it. And it's interesting over time, particularly with iThemes, we go, okay, themes are getting saturated. And then you see this dynamic you talked about with Squarespace starting to come in going, and it felt like to me, James, that those players out there that didn't exist when WordPress was for sure getting its like upward momentum didn't really exist, and WordPress became an option. And then over time, I was like, golly, if you look into even Webflow, come into Webflow and think that the tools around in the competitive landscape have gotten way better. You know, there's great experiences. And it seems like it shifted the market where the focus is a little bit more like you're serving small businesses, for instance, and this web designer freelancer comes in and goes, okay, you want this experience. It's a little bit more complicated than you could probably get on your own right now.
Yep.
It seems like the agencies, the freelancers I talked to, it's like, I wondered the other day, I was like, okay, what happened to the, you know, $2,000, $5,000 website? And back in the day, you know, you could get like, that was the heyday of that. But I'm interested in your thoughts there too, like from those trends in WordPress. Have you seen that too, where it's like, there's really good options out there. Now you said freedom, and I'd ring that bell as well. And that's why I love WordPress, because I can do whatever I want with it. I'm not locked in, but you know, some of those trends that you're seeing too out there with WordPress and its position in the market, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And we talk to our members a lot. We do a lot of surveys and where they're heading at. And there's a lot of very healthy businesses, and there's a lot of people going in for it. But there's also a lot of people who are receiving pushback from people in that looking at that particular kind of like dollar bracket, if you will. I mean, when you're talking about, you know, a kind of a medium sized business, you know, sort of someone who's actually looking for, you know, a whole range of different things, then of course they're going to use WordPress. I mean, it's patently obvious. You know, you can't have the you know, the capacity to offer anything near, or even or even match the how would I put it, the kind of regulatory requirements that you would be looking for, and the level of support and the level of those things. And that's tied up. That's not going anywhere. But it's the people, say, for example, my mate who runs a gym. You know, he's very much, his position is, I've got a Squarespace website. I don't particularly like it. It's a bit annoying and I have to learn all this shit, but you know, it's a couple hundred bucks, $300, and I'm not going to spend $5,000 on something. That's the person, that's the segment that's going to be a problem. And they, that segment is huge. There's a lot more of them out of there. And while it might not be the big bucks, you know, or the medium bucks, it's super important. And we're really trying to find ways to help people actually, you know, have an impact on that segment. So for example, like with, say our hosting, I'm gonna say, like, we've got this new hosting product called Quantum, which is a $4 or $3.60 a month managed WordPress hosting, which is pretty damn good, if you ask me. It gives you your own IP address, it gives things, but anyway, I'm not selling it there, but it's just something I'm really excited about. So if someone runs up a Quantum site with a, say, photography portfolio thing for like a wedding photographer or something, and then they run it on our system, then all that they would have to spend essentially is $3.60 a month. They could put the template, everything in place. We've got a domains thing that's rolling out next week, where we're actually doing wholesale domain pricing for all of our members who are like on the IR agency package. So $11.50 for like a .com. Every month, no stupid discounts, no nothing. They can sell that to a customer for $20. They can sell them the hosting package for another $20 or $25, and they can have a support add-on or an extra theme for another $30-$40. So they can actually, and they can have that automatically deployed on their site for their customer, who's then going to be paying them $80 a month for their cost of under $15. And that's before you talk about support and all of those other different maintenance and things you can add to it. And that makes it competitive to Squarespace.
Yeah. Well, and you look at across the industry too, and it's like, I saw that email, by the way, and I was like, I remember the days where you could get hosting for that and try out your idea. Even if you're like, for me, it's like you said, you had a couple of domains sitting around. Well, I got way too many, but you know, you have an idea, deploy it, see, and get it going, but you're not, your investment isn't big, too big on that. And so I love that too.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, getting down a little into WordPress too, because you've seen a lot, seen where it's gone and evolved, is, you know, some of these big ones like Gutenberg, the code editor. Yep. And I'm curious, you know, the direction too of WordPress. I don't like to say this, but in web terms, WordPress is ancient. Like it's code that's what, 20 plus years here now. Well, we're talking about, you know, and you're like, but in web terms, it feels young still to me. But in web terms, you're like, all these new startups, some of this technology didn't exist when WordPress rolled out.
Yep.
But I'm curious about your thoughts on the direction of the platform too, and things like, I'm gonna put in the buzzword, but it's a good buzzword, which is Gutenberg, and the code editor, and get your thoughts around that, and where Drake, you know, how does it best, WordPress best position itself to continue to democratize the web?
Yep. It's a great question, and I think it bears a lot of challenge for the future growth. In my opinion, it's a kind of a, and not necessarily a very popular one, but I would say that the WordPress has succeeded because, well, it succeeded because it was open source in the first instance, and as in beer, compared to, you know, your movable typing competitors. But also it succeeded because of plugins and themes, because of its ease of integration, because of the simplicity, because of the way that things held together, and because it allowed people to create these sorts of websites that you know, you could play around with and do. It achieved critical mass really quickly from that, and it just grew, which is why it's going to dominate that more complex website space forever, because it allows more complex websites and more playing around. Now, Gutenberg. I don't know a great deal about Gutenberg apart from the fact that I tried to make Gutenberg. in 2014. I gave it a red hot go. I was like, okay, Squarespace, these drag and drop editors, these Wix, web.com are actually really, really dangerous. Good platforms that have got a problem here. WordPress has these wonderful themes that are out there, like iThemes, absolutely, and you know, and all of these other stuff. But none of the, all of these are developer friendly. All of these are short code functioning. All of these are requiring to do CSS and these things. We need a simple drag and drop theme that that anybody can use in a straightforward way. And we tried, I had a go, it was called Upfront. We spent an absolute fortune on it. I spent an absolute time on it and I discovered that I'm not talented enough. And I think there's just two problems. The first was in terms of design and concept, we were fairly close. Like we were okay-ish. We had some things. And I look at Gutenberg now and I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that. That's a really cool challenge. And this, I really like how they've done that. And it reminds me of very much of Upfront. And we had some really talented people working on it. Like Victor, who I used to work with, was like leading in. It was really cool stuff. But we definitely didn't have the technical skills. We were nowhere near. Like we just couldn't iron out the bugs. We couldn't put it together. We couldn't make it work seamlessly. There was too much load on it. It was started in such a way. Didn't know how to project management. You know, it was just too hard. So we failed with it, which is a shame. And because it was, but we had a go. We gave it a crack. And I see the same thing happening with Gutenberg because it looks like exactly the same things. My problem with Gutenberg though isn't how it works or what it does, because I think it's really pretty cool. It's really interesting. And I've spent a lot of time, I've had a lot of amazing people working on it. I think it's got a really good future. My problem with Gutenberg is it is baked into WordPress. And that WordPress has succeeded because it's been an open place where you have a marketplace and a selection of people innovating and trying and creating new things with themes, for example, across those different things. I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that Elementor, Divi, or whatever is coming after them, those guys, would, or perhaps still will, who knows, but would be much better than Gutenberg, vastly better, purely because of competition, because of range of people going at each other, because of financial incentives, because of capitalism. Yeah, call it that, you know. Right. It's that, and because that's what's happened in WordPress since and that's what's made WordPress successful. And yeah. So the baked in nature of Gutenberg versus these other options is and I think that's the problem, and it's a bit sad really. I wish it had just stayed as a theme that maybe Automattic could have made it as a competitor to these things, and and they tried to grow it in the same way as they're doing Jetpack and those things, and that's great. And I think it would have had a better chance as well, because it would have been pushed by other people in that competitive space and direction, and just make it a purely commercial model rather than, this is the thing as well, I mean, as a commercial model, like the stuff I'm doing, obviously WordPress is great and it's wonderful, and the open source community and the way that they work through it and the way that it's learned and matured, this is brilliant. And I thank everybody who's on it with all my heart, because I wouldn't have a business otherwise. I wouldn't be able to do this stuff without them. It's absolutely brilliant. But because I'm a private company, we are a private company. Yeah. We don't have investors and shareholders, those things here. We can make decisions that are unpopular, or that that people don't like. We kill 90% of our plugins, We can do things that you can't do in an open source community, because you can do them, but everyone will leave or hate you or just have a huge palaver and things there. I think innovation doesn't happen that well in that environment. I think lots of great things do, but I think innovation happens when we're competing against each other and trying to do cool new things and get stuff out there.
Yeah, I totally see that.
End rant.
No, I totally see that. I think that's such a good perspective to share in the space, in our ecosystem or community, because if you don't mind, we were talking before and you're like, I think it should have stopped at this version. And I was like, what happened to that version? And would you share that too? Because
I think I said that WordPress peaked at 0.72.
Yeah.
And obviously WordPress now is vastly better than 0.72, but and I'm not entirely sure it's 0.72. Please fact check the hell out of me, whoever's out there. But essentially, as soon as the integration, the seamless, beautiful, amazing integration of plugins and themes and the hooks and everything that allowed that to it rolled into WordPress, that was the peak of WordPress innovation. And it was brilliant. And it has been led to all of these different things here. Since then, WordPress has not been revolutionizing things. It has not been transforming things. Interesting in the way that you talk about interesting Gutenberg name, because of course Gutenberg, you know, was a revolutionary technology. I don't think it's a revolutionary theme or a revolutionary, you know, way of processing or making things. Because I think that's when WordPress kind of peaked and has just been kind of evolving since otherwise, whereas the innovation has been happening on the sidelines.
Well, so that kind of times was a lot of the discussion in the product space, particularly with plugins around WordPress.org and things with our product members at PostStatus. And I think that's so compelling to say too, because I really appreciate the ecosystem, the product ecosystem, we might have called them premium one day, but now they're commercial or whatever name we're going to put on them. But and when this conversation came around the active installs data, you know, my first question was, and this is one I want to kind of ask you too, is our plugins, themes, third party stuff, whether they're free, paid, whatever in between, essential to WordPress past and essential to WordPress future. And so I'm going to submit that to you because I want to hear your thoughts on that. I have my own opinions, but I want to hear yours.
There's a lot of opinions, aren't there, about the in-store thing. I have to admit, I've been lurking quite actively in those discussions, and we've been having a few internal chats about it as well, because of course it's important to us. You know, we want to know how well or not how well our plugins are doing. I mean, we've seen Smush recently over the last year or so. It's one of our leading plugins. It's the big thing that, you know, people really like, and actually started to lose some market share to some of our competitors like Ooh and Short Pixel and those things there. And these are fine plugins and they do a great job. And, you know, but I was still like, hang on. You know, I thought we were really good at this. We're doing this really well. Why are we losing this? And the reason so we looked into it. We did a huge amount of discovery, and we found some things which we thought, oh, okay, our bulk smash limit's too low. Okay, all right, our background image optimization isn't working. We're having to have people keep it over. Our new user experience for the first like kind of five clicks, things there isn't that good compared to these guys. And so we dived into it and we worked our butts off to improve it, and we're rolling out improvements at the moment. And just as the plugin active install growth stuff disappeared, we were back to level like up from 0.1 to 0%, and we were all cheering. We were like, every week we'd see update on Sunday and we're like, yes, you know, and it's starting to get towards positive territory, we're back, baby. And so it was pretty gutting to kind of suddenly have it go and to not get that kind of feedback loop that we were doing good things and creating good things. Now, having said that, I think the reason for the active installs being removed, which was given in the track ticket or whatever things there, not enough obfuscation, not sufficiently obfuscated, if I pronounce it, I can't remember. It's one of those words I can never get out. No, not sufficiently hidden. Let's say that. Let's translate it to there. I think that's a good reason to get rid of it. I think that, not to get rid of them, to improve them. I think that a good way to think about this is think about what the internet would be like if Google published their algorithm. Like literally published it. I mean, they will say, we do publish it. We've got a page guidelines and 60 pages, 90 pages. And I'm like, yeah, that's good. And that's a guide. And we go by that. And that's really helpful. But I want to see the actual algorithm, the actual code that shows how you display these things here. I will tell you what will happen if that happened. If that happened, the entire internet would be destroyed. because it would be immediately dominated by a bunch of machine learning bots going through Google's algorithm and spitting out things that matched it. The people who were able to, when it updated, the people who were able to more quickly respond, so this would be why it'd be machine learning, AI stuff, and change their sites to fit into this new algorithm would be the winners. And so you would have an internet that was basically written by computers for computers. And it would be absolutely rubbish. And that's why Google don't publish, one of the reasons, but that's a very, very good reason for Google not publishing its algorithm. And the same is true for plugins and plugin pages and all of those different things. If we know exactly, as a business owner, if I know exactly how it is I can get my plugin to rank above Yoast and get SmartCrawl into that position, yes, well, I'm damn well going to do it. And I'm going to do it hard, and I'm going to actually devote probably most of the resources of the company to figuring out how that happens and how we can quickly respond things there. And then all that we're going to get is a sea of plugins whose solitary purpose is to rank higher than Yoast and not immediately lose their users once they install them, or at least get them to create an API key or give me a lead or do whatever it is, these sort of things. And that would not be good for WordPress or plugins. And essentially what they're saying is that the plugin code for ranking, the code for, you know, kind of making plugins appear and things there, wasn't actually, it was a bit too obvious. And there are people out there who are a hell of a lot smarter than I am, lots of us, not very hard, there's lots of people out there who are a lot smarter than I am, who have essentially cracked the code. They've figured out how to do it, and they're constantly cracking the code, and they're constantly going through it. I think I remember when there was something about how many support tickets you had and how many support tickets you closed. And so people were creating support tickets for themselves and then answering them with somewhat general things and stuff and attaching it to the plugin. All sorts of sketchy shit happening left, right, and center. And essentially, it was too obvious. It was too there. People were gaming it, and this was going to produce a world of shit plugins that are basically existing in order to just climb the charts and do the machine learning thing. Now, what would have been better would have been if they'd just improved the algorithm or made it to the point at which, a la Google, you know, back in the day, in 2002, you could game Google. You could SEO hack. You could do these things. You can't anymore. Right. You can. You can. I mean, there are bits and bobs, but you wouldn't want to because it's too dangerous. You might get caught. And also, it's just a bit too challenging and it's too clever and these things here. What would be great would be they just improved that. They just had a big ass project to improve the plugin algorithm. I don't care if it's open source community. I don't care if Automattic writes every single part of that code and contains it as proprietary information and never lets anybody see it. But then that would enable those stats to stay in place. And that's my complaint. That's my complaint about it. It's like, guys, you just pulled something that was so bloody important. And I know why you pulled it. It makes perfect sense why you pulled it. But like, couldn't you have just, you know, done something better? Couldn't you have been smart enough to actually solve it in another way? And they say that they will. You know, this is the intention, is to come back with a bigger and better and things here. But like, man, was it that bad? Was it that much of a problem that, because we were checking out our onboarding process. We were reviewing our complaints by users. We were doing deep surveys. We were doing third party, like kind of usertesting.com things where people actually log in and you watch them talking through the process and the problems we have to improve our stuff. And now we're like, we don't know if this is working. we're kind of shooting in the dark, and that's the majority of people. And there might have been some people who were getting an advantage and screwing around with it, but couldn't you have just spent the time to improve the algo and then just switched it rather than dumping this on us, which feels horrible and draconian and alienates people and stops me from improving Smush like I'd want to.
Yeah, and I go back to what you said, which is, you know, the what the third part, you know, the plugins and themes out there have done is help WordPress innovate and continue to stay simple enough as a core. And then you extend as you need it for those complex things that you might have. And, you know, the question I ask is, I hope when I say, are plugins essential to WordPress's continued growth and health? I hope the answer is a resounding heck yes. The second question that I think this particular issue illuminates is, how do we continue to better support? And this is part of the role of PostStatus, is how do we continue to support plug-in ecosystem, like even better, you know, is take this as an opportunity to say, this is essential. This is why WordPress has grown. It will continue to grow and it will continue to innovate. And then the question becomes, how do we continue to foster and grow the health and support of those vital plugin developers out there creating the next whatever thing it is? Go ahead.
I mean, I don't know. It's your business. And I you know, there are loads of different ways of doing it. I didn't want to straight off just answer it. But I think what you could do in this first instance is you could look at a community project where people actually collect plugin install data and pool it so that you are able to have a bunch of people sharing data to say, this is how things are going and this is how things are not going. I mean, if WordPress.org won't do it, then why don't we?
Yeah.
That'd be my thought.
Well, I know we've run it over time, actually, but I really appreciate this. Maybe this will be part two is where we dig into some of these things too. Because I really wanted to, I think you got to share some of the things you're doing, but I wanted to talk about WPMU and your future there and what you're planning. But maybe that'll be part two. I know we've kind of gone along, but James Farmer, thanks so much for this. I think this was our teaser for part two, by the way.
But, oh, no, I'd love to. Thank you.
We got to talk more often because we've got a lot to talk about still. But James, thanks so much for being on the Post-Status Draft podcast. And I appreciate your time. And it's good catching up with you and hearing your story, sharing some of your thoughts, too, I think are really critical for our ecosystem as a whole. So thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me, Corey.
You bet. Thanks, James Farmer. And by the way, tell WPMU Dev, check out what they're doing. Cool stuff they've got going on there. You got so many things going on that I should just say, go check it out. See what they're doing.
Have a go. We've got a free level. People can play around with stuff as well. So give it a go. Used to have a free level. Have fun. Have a tweak.
Will do. All right. Thanks, everybody, for being listening in. And we'll be talking to James, I'm sure, very soon.
Do you think we're the same? What's changed? Who's we? The WordPress Royal We. If you'd like to carry on this conversation or start another one, get in touch with us at PostStatus. You can email me, dan@poststatus.com. And if you're a PostStatus member, you know where to find me. If you're not, it's not a cult. Come check us out. We've got the most amazing Slack channels where members give and grow together. And we have a lot of fun on Twitter @post_status. Thanks for listening to Post Status Draft, a podcast from Post Status, the community for WordPress professionals.